Okay, folks, we're all set to get ourselves underway here now in lesson number 23 in our series of studies dealing with the survey of the books of Hebrews through the book of the Revelation. We are now in the book of the Revelation and down to our last couple of lessons in this very brief doctrinal gist survey of this very special portion of God's Word. Hebrews to Revelation, once again pertaining especially to the time when God resumes and fulfills His program with the nation Israel on this earth. Take your Bibles and turn with me now, if you would, to the book of the Revelation. I'll take our signboard down here. We'll get ourselves right underway. Last time, as we began our examination of the book of the Revelation, or our survey examination of the book of the Revelation, I gave you primarily the outline that there is to the book, and special focus, of course, upon the middle bulk section of the book of the Revelation that pertains to the revelation itself, the revelation of the things that will be going on in the day of the Lord, culminating in the Lord Himself personally coming back to this earth, the great and terrible day of the Lord, completely therefore at that time vanquishing all Israel's enemies, demolishing the plan of evil on this earth, and therefore establishing His kingdom on this earth in fulfillment of His plan and purpose with the nation Israel as covenanted for in the Abrahamic covenant, and also, of course, at the exact same time fulfilling His plan and purpose for the earth in the first place, which He created to be His residence in the midst of creation. And also, as we ended up our last study, I pointed out to you how that we need to focus our attention upon the issue of the structure of the book of the Revelation, especially of that section beginning in chapter 6 there in verse 1 and running all the way over to verse 5 of chapter 22, where you have, as I've said a number of times, that daily newspaper type account of the transpiring of the events in the day of the Lord. John, as we saw last time, is taken by the Spirit into the day of the Lord. He's transported into the future and he sees the things that are going to be transpiring in the day of the Lord from two particular venues. At times he's up there in the third heaven, in the heavenly places, and observing things from that perspective. Other times he's on the earth and observing the things as they transpire on the earth. He functions as a reporter. He's given instructions by the Lord as a reporter to record the things that he sees, to write them down in a book, and to send them to the seven churches of the scattered remnant that'll be in Asia in that time in the future day of the Lord. And we saw those matters, and we saw the general outline and issues that are in the introduction from chapter 1, verse 1 to verse 8 that John prefaces the revelation with. And then how he concludes it, of course, in chapter 22, verse 6, and down through verse 21, the end of the book. And we saw some parallels there, as brief as the comments we made upon them were. But the focus of our attention, of course, is upon the revelation itself that begins in verse 9 of chapter 1 and runs through to verse 5 of chapter 22, and especially upon the daily newspaper account of the events of the Lord's Day, beginning in chapter 6 there in verse 1, and running to chapter 22 and verse 5 there. But I pointed out, like I said, at the end of our last lesson, the issue of the structure of that daily newspaper account. And I introduced an expression or a designation for the way in which the information is presented, a designation that I give it. I don't know if you'll hear other people talking about it that way or not. But I talked about the issue of looping parallelism, which is a technical expression, I guess you might say, for the way in which that information is presented. And I gave you the general gist of the concept last time in the remaining few moments that we had in our hour study, and talking about how it's a way of presenting information in which it comes in increments, so to speak. You get small doses of information, and it overlays. The next piece of information kind of overlays the first piece of information, in a sense. And you get this build-up of information, so at the end you get a total package, but it's presented in a way that doesn't overwhelm you and swamp you with details at first. You're able to get a scope view, so to speak, of the general lay of the land, to use that expression, at first. And then you go back and you get some details that you're able to fill into particular spots that are important to understand. And then once you've comprehended that, then you get another dose of information about the same issue that's further advanced and builds upon that. And it's really a marvelous way of presenting, especially historical information that has an awful lot to it, and an awful lot of events and issues about that time that's in view that are critical to understand. So instead of dumping it all on you at once, you get it in this looping parallelism type concept, and you're able to digest it as it comes, and be able to build it up in your comprehension. And I want to, like I said, as we need to do, I want to show you other examples of that in the scriptures as we get ourselves underway here now and resume our study before we get over there and examine that it's the way in which the information is presented there in the book of the Revelation. I want you to see other common examples of it, how God has used it a great number of times as great portions of His Word, especially in His program with Israel, historical accounts that are presented in that manner. And oftentimes people recognize it and easily perceive the reality of it and the value of it and everything. But for some reason, when they get over to the book of the Revelation, they fail to acknowledge the same thing is going on there. And oftentimes, as I pointed out to you last time, there's confusion in their minds with respect to the calendar of events, so to speak, there in this daily newspaper type account. Because they see something that's spoken about in a general way, for example, in the opening of the seven seals that are described first there in chapter 6, and then they see a repetition of that concept later on in either the vials, for example, that come right down the end, and there's confusion as to what's going on and is there a repetition and all this type of stuff. We'll comment on that a little more when we actually get over there. But I want to talk more about the issue of this looping parallelism. And like I said, give you some examples of it, examine some occurrences of it, make sure you appreciate the reality of it and how this formula of presentation operates before we actually look there at the book of the Revelation. Truth of the matter is, in the book of the Revelation, it's the last time God uses it. But He's used it a tremendous number of times in the scriptures beforehand. In fact, you can't get out of the first three chapters of Genesis without running into it, and that's the first example we're actually going to end up looking at. God starts off His historical record of what He did when it came to creation by using looping parallelism. And it's very fitting that He would also end the scriptures and the account of what He's going to be doing in His day by utilizing that very same format of prayer. And He does that very same thing. But there's numerous times in between that He does it. Well, let's talk about it in general here, first of all. And to give you an example of looping parallelism and just describe it for what it is, I'm going to make up a book, for example, that I'm simply going to call Book X. And I've completely erased everything we had on the board last time. The outline, everything is gone so that we can make use of the full board here and everything. So hopefully if you jotted down some notes with respect to that basic outline, because we may need it a little later on here. But let's take let's put the title up here for what we're doing once again. The issue is looping parallelism. Parallelism. All right, that's my term for it, but let's describe it here for a bit. Let's take this thing that I'm calling Book X. If you want to think of it as a book in the Bible, fine. If you don't want to, that's fine. It's a historical account, though, of a period of time. And I'm just going to let this timeline on the board represent what Book X talks about. In fact, let's just put the designation up there. It's called Book X once again. And it starts out at a period of time that we'll just mark off there as zero, for example, and it describes events and historical occurrences of things as it progresses on in its account out there to point X. Let's put it out there like that. All right. If Book X is using what's called looping parallelism to present its information, then what it does is something like this. Let's say it takes its first three chapters. Let's just put that up here like this. Chapter 1 through 3. And what it will do in its first three chapters is it'll give you a very general, sweeping account of that entire time frame that it's concerned with. It'll come, therefore, in the first three chapters, it'll come along and it'll describe things right from the beginning, and it'll give a very sweeping general account of things right to the end of what it wants to describe. And when you're talking about looping parallelism, what you're talking about is the first description of the period of time that is being dealt with, the first description of the history or the transpiring of the events in the period of time that is being spoken about. The first account is a quick sweeping scope. Let's just use that word there. In fact, we can put the word quick up there if we want to also. A quick sweeping scope record of what takes place in the period of time under consideration. Looping parallelism starts off with that. And you get a general sweeping account, therefore, of whatever period of time is being spoken about. Here in Book X, it's from time 0 to point X out there, and the first three chapters give a quick sweeping scope account. In other words, the information that's contained, therefore, is going to be very general. Not much detail is necessarily going to be given. No particular point of time is necessarily going to be paused at, for example, and examined in any great detail. You're just going to get this quick sweeping scope effect and description of the period of time under consideration. But Book X has got more than three chapters to it. Let's say it's got 10 chapters to it. Once it's given the quick scope account of the period of time it's considering, then what it does, then where it gets its name looping parallelism from, is beginning in chapter 4, and let's say from chapter 4 to chapter 6, it gives a parallel account of the same period of time it just covered in the first three chapters. In other words, what it does is it gets to the end of chapter 3 and the quick scope of the period of time under consideration has been dealt with, and then chapter 4 comes along and chapter 4 loops back to the same, not always, but oftentimes to the same point at which the quick scope account began. It loops back and then it lays down another parallel account. And this time, in chapters 4 through 6, since you now understand the quick sweeping scope of what's going on and the time frame in view, now chapters 4 through 6, under the principle of looping parallelism, when the next account loops back to the beginning and is laid down, now you start getting details. And now you're going to start getting some advanced details and close scrutinizing details of that period of time you just quickly swept through. And now in chapters 4 through 6, for example, in this example we're making out of Book X here, maybe in chapter 4, for example, there'll be a close examination of this period of time right here. When you went through it first in chapters 1 through 3, you might have simply noted a characteristic of it. Maybe it was a time of great prosperity, for example, in some individual's life. Well, now when you're going through it in the looping parallelism concept, now that you've looped back and you're laying down a parallel account that's full of details, now you're going to start talking about why the prosperity was experienced by this individual. Maybe you're going to talk about the fact that he was prosperous because he inherited a lot of money, for example, from someone. Or he engaged in some great business venture and it paid off. That's something along those lines. You're going to start giving great details about that item you just simply noted when you quickly went through it first. This is the issue of looping parallelism. And There's no real end to the number of times you can loop back and start doing things like this. But what you're doing every time you loop back and you go over that same historical period of time or whatever again, is every time you loop back, the next account adds details to it. And by the time you get to the end of the entire account, you've gone through that period of time a number of times, and you've gone through it in an education manner, in which the first time you went through it, you got a milk understanding of it, general overview. Next time you went through it, you got some details added to it, and you're starting to flush out your comprehension all that much more. The next time you go through it, it's flushed out even more with even more details added, and so forth. Let me point out one thing. That's the basic principle. That's not hard to understand, and I think just by saying it to you the way I'm saying it, hopefully you've got it. If not, you can pause the tape and stop and think about it for a while before you go on here and everything. But that's the basic issue, and that's why it's called looping parallelism. The account gives you parallel descriptions of a period of time, a period of history it's concerned with, and they keep on looping back, and every time the loop takes place and you go back, more and more details are added. And you can easily see, therefore, that when you get the whole package of information together, you've got a great buildup of layers, so to speak, of information about that time from general to particular. Let me also point out, though, that every time in looping parallelism, every time you loop back, you don't have to always go right back to the beginning. It depends upon whether the account requires it or not. Let's just give an example here in which the first loop did go right back to the beginning and go over the whole period of time again. Let's pretend this is someone's life, from the moment they were born until the time they die. And the chapters 1 through 3 in Book X on this biography, for example, of this individual gives a quick scope once again of his life from the moment he was born until he died. And then beginning in chapter 4, the looping parallelism comes into effect. You go back once again to the time which he was born, and you start getting details added in his life. And chapters 4 through 6 focus upon particular important, pertinent events within his life, for example, that you can now plug into the general scope that you've got and appreciate incidents and anecdotes and turning points and stuff like that in this individual's life. But like I said, this book has 10 chapters to it. So let's say, beginning in chapter 7 now, and through chapter 9, once the first loop has gone through, then it loops back again, but this time the author's not going to go right back to the beginning. The author's going to go back to a particular point in this guy's life. Let's say it was when he graduated university there at the age of 22 and entered into his chosen field of profession, for example. And let's say that's what he became famous for in his life. And that's why this biography is being written about him, because of the great contribution he might have made to society or some field of science or something along those lines in his profession. And so when that begins to be focused upon in chapters 7 through 9, the author is looping back to that event, and then he begins to lay down a parallel account about that time on in the man's career until he died. And you're going to get great details now given from the time the man was 22 on until he dies out there. You see, the next time it loops back, even further details are given. And like I said, this book has 10 chapters to it. So let's say chapter 10. Let's say this individual, just before he died or something like that, was honored in some way, maybe by a Congressional Medal of Honor. I don't know if that would fit into a situation like that, but you know what I'm talking about. Something along those lines. And that took place within a year or two before the man died and everything. When the author loops back to cover those details, he's not going to go all the way back to the guy's birth or when he was 12 or even back to when he was 22 or even back to the highlights of his career and the great times, you know, when he might have won the Nobel Peace Prize or something along those lines. But right there at the end, he's going to loop back and he's going to give you some very particular details right about those last 2 years, for example, of the guy's life. Now, this is a crude example, I realize that, but it is an example that illustrates the operation of this method of presenting especially historical information, timeline-type information, that's very common. And what I just described to you is something that authors quite often do when they write biographies. Or when someone writes an autobiography, it's quite often done. When history books are written, this principle is commonly used. Looping parallelism. First, you get a quick scope of the time frame that you're dealing with, so you get a general lay of the land, as we might say. Then you loop back, and you go over that same period of time, and you start emphasizing particular details that need to be dealt with and that fit into that general scope you just got. And oftentimes, you need to loop back again and again and again to keep on supplying further and further details. Note one particular thing here, though, by this illustration. Notice that if you were to, when you put these layers of information together, notice that there's one particular period of time in the guy's life in this example that is always being dealt with every time the loop goes through. And that's the end. And so by the time you get to the end of the book, chapter 10 in this book X here, you know the most about the end of the man's life than you do about the beginning of it. That's the way in which looping parallelism commonly works. All right, I think you got the general gist of the matter here. Let's start looking at some examples of the fact that it's a common way in which God presents the information that he's presented to us in the scriptures, especially in historical accounts of things. As I just mentioned a few moments ago, you can't get out of the first three chapters of Genesis without him utilizing it. In fact, he utilized it great number of times in the book of Genesis. We're going to look at some of the main outstanding examples of it here in just a moment. But it's replete throughout the historical accounting, especially in God's program with Israel. Well, come back with me, if you would, to the book of Genesis, and let's start noticing this. Looping parallelism. Like I said, that's, as I said a number of times, that's my designation for it. Parallelism is a common word that's used in connection with other descriptions for this method. But I call it looping parallelism because it lets you appreciate how that looping concept is going on all the time. Well, anyway, Genesis chapter 1 here. And we're just going to talk in general about these things, that these examples that we're going to look at here, so we make sure we have the time to deal with the daily newspaper account there of the Lord's Day in the book of the Revelation here. But you know, beginning here in Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1, and running down through to verse 3, actually, of chapter 2, you have an account of the 6 days of creation followed by the seventh day when God rested from all that he created and made. Verse 1 once again, and down through verse 5 is the first day. Verse 6 and down through verse 8 is the second day. Verse 9 and down through verse 13 is the third day. Verse 14 and down through verse 19 is the fourth day. Verse 20 down through verse 23 is the fifth day. Verse 24 and down through verse 31 is the sixth day. And then the first three verses of chapter 2 describe the seventh day. 6 days of creation, the seventh day followed by the first week, therefore, of the existence of the universe that God created and made as described here. Now notice something. Look especially at the sixth day that begins there in verse 24. From verse 24 down through verse 31, once again, is the sixth day. And notice here, especially when it comes to man in verse 26, as in God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. So God created man in his own image, and the image of God created him, male and female created them, and he blessed them, etc. there. All right. As you go through these days of creation here, and then followed by the day of rest, the seventh day there, you get a scope view, and a quick scope view of the 6 days of creation followed by the seventh day of rest. But notice now, beginning in verse 4 of chapter 2, God goes back in to those 6 days and describes in more detail things that took place on one of those particular days, the sixth day itself. In other words, what I'm saying is, chapter 1, verse 1 through to the third verse of chapter 2 is a quick scope presentation of the days of creation followed by the day of rest, making the first week of existence of the universe God created and made. And then beginning in verse 4 of chapter 2, he's going to loop back into that account, into that historical account, not all the way right back to day 1, but he's going to loop back to day 6. And he's going to describe some things that he did on day 6 that he didn't describe in the scope account of it. He told you in the scope account that he made man male and female. When he loops back now and describes it, he's going to come along to tell you how he made the male first. And it wasn't until later on in that day he made the female. In the quick scope account, you don't know. If that's all he told you, you'd think he made them both at the exact same moment. But he didn't. But it wasn't necessary when he gave you the quick scope account for him to tell you that right away. It's important for you, first of all, in the quick scope account, to get the scope, to know the time frame which he's talking about, and to get the general appreciation for what he did on each of those days, so that you can appreciate the seventh day when he rested from it all. Let me erase book X here and start, as we do these examples, illustrate them as they actually are. You see the issue there? I think you should easily grasp that. I said you can't get out of the first 3 chapters without it, and you don't get out of the first 2 chapters, actually, without it. In fact, the historical account from day 7 doesn't proceed on until you get to chapter 3. Chapter 2 is a loop, a looping parallelism right back into the 7 days that have been described, going back to day 6. And not necessarily even to the beginning of day 6, but back into day 6. So let's illustrate it here once again. Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 to chapter 2, verse 3. Here's your historical account once again. It's going from zero, time zero, to day 7. First week of the existence of the universe once again. 6 days of creation making, a seventh day of rest. And that's what you got. And that's a scope presentation of information. Let's put up the general scope of information about it. And in fact, you could fill it in and outline like we just did there, verses 1 through 4 first and so forth there. But now beginning in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 4, and running through the end of the chapter, verse 25 there, God loops back, not all the way this time, all the way back to the beginning there, but he loops back into, let's say, right there is where Let's say this is day 6, all right? He loops back into it, and even not right back to the beginning of day 6 necessarily, but loops back into it, and at a particular point there, when he created man, he resumes the account again. He lays down a parallel account of day 6. And he's going to give you details of day 6 that he didn't give you in that scope account. There, that's looping parallelism. And like I said, you find out, for example, beginning there in verse... In fact, he tells you that's what he's doing in verse 4 of chapter 2. These are the generations of the heavens and of the earth when they were created in the day that the Lord God made the earth and the heavens and every plant of the field before it was in the earth and every herb of the field before it grew, for the Lord had not caused it to rain upon the earth, and there was not a man to till the ground. But there went up a mist from the earth and watered the whole face of the ground. And God formed man. He's taking you back into, he's going to describe the generations. And he's going to take you back in now and give you details about the provision for the generating and the generation, the generating capacity of the heaven, the earth, and the life forms that are there that are designed to generate. And he takes you back into the account to do that, especially back into the sixth day account. Because he mentioned there was not a man to till the ground and so forth. And he takes you back into the sixth day and describes now in greater detail what he did on day 6. That's looping parallelism. He loops back, gives you a parallel account of either the entire time, but not in this case, but in this case, of a particular day in that scope account in which you need some pertinent details to understand some things. And then there's a whole bunch of details there about the fact that the male was created first, then the female, how the female was created in a different way than the male was. What provisions that God made for the man to begin to exercise dominion that you learned about back there in the scope that was given to him. A very special place he's given to live and so forth. All that kind of detail is given. And more than that. God starts off his historical record that records what he's doing, his plan of purpose, with looping parallelism. And he uses it repeatedly throughout the scriptures. And as we're going to see, he ends his account, the book of the Revelation, with that very same system of presenting the information. You hear in the book of Genesis here, come over to chapter 5 for a moment. Notice when the book of the generations of Adam. Notice when by the time you get to the end of chapter 4, and you're going to loop back again. With the book of the generations of Adam, we're not going to take the time to do this and everything, but you can spend the time doing this and learn an awful lot about this and appreciate this looping parallelism and the value of being educated by its means, in the small doses, incremental milk to meat concept, and that's everything we've talked about in other studies about edification and milk to meat and so forth, and foundation to. Superstructure and everything. It all employs the looping parallelism method of presentation. And it's consistent with it and functions along with it and so forth there. But you get the account of things once you've looped back and everything, and then you start in chapter 3 and verse 1. You pick it up from the seventh day on, and you get it's kind of like that. In fact, we can kind of fill it in here a little bit. You get chapter 3. And verse 1 and following, I'm just going to put this up there in very general terms, and you pick it up from day 7, and you're moving on out here, and you're describing things from that point on, and the fall takes place and everything, and the initial phases of Satan's course for this world, he charted with Cain, everything gets itself underway, and you see all that there in chapter 4, and then you come to chapter 5, verse 1, and following there through the 5th chapter, and what he does is he takes it to the point that he stopped there, and he's going to loop back, and this time as he loops back, he's going to loop back once again to the point of the fall there, verse 1. This is the book of the generations of Adam, in the day that God created man, the likeness of God made he him, male and female created he them, and blessed them and called their name Adam. In the day that when they were created, actually it goes back to the sixth day there and everything, as far as the point of reference and acknowledgement is concerned there, because it's going to make a stark contrast between the fact that now Adam brings forth in his likeness, not in God's likeness any longer. And it says in verse 3, and Adam lived 130 years and begat a son in his own likeness, in contrast to God's likeness, after his image, and called his name Seth. And you got this looping parallelism concept again here, and you're gonna start going over this account, but you're not gonna be following Cain's line now or anything like that, like you have done for the course of this world Satan charted, but you're gonna go back and follow Adam's line, and you're looping back, and you're going over. And actually, chapter 5, it takes you through about 1600 years of human history following Adam's creation there and everything, and you go through this list of the generations that come forth from Adam and so forth down to Noah there in verse 32, and then look at verse 1 of chapter 6. You're gonna get to Genesis chapter 6 there, and verse 1 and following, and once you come to the end of that historical account of names, everything up to Noah, about 1600, then you're gonna loop back again into a particular time, not right back to Adam again, but it says, and it came to pass when man began to multiply on the face of the earth, and daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God did. You're going to learn that someplace back in that genealogy that's just been given to you there, the book of the generations of Adam, when man began to multiply, a cataclysmic event took place. And then you're going to have the account of things that took place from that time on. You see that
loop back, details, details given, further historical, loop back, details given, loop back, further details. That's looping parallelism. And it just goes on and on and on. In fact, every one of the books of the generation of anybody does that. Come on over here to chapter 9 here in Genesis. The flood's over. God blesses Noah and his sons there and everything that come out of the ark and so forth there, chapter 9 and chapter 10. And you've got a you've got a scope description. I'm running out of space here. I can't illustrate this. We're going to have to race this to do the next ones and everything like that. But you can, I think, easily just follow along with it here. And I better keep on checking on time and make sure we're not just running out of time. But you've got the account here now of what transpired once Noah and his sons came out of the ark. And you've got the issue of the generations of Noah's sons there, beginning in chapter 10, Shem, Ham, and Japheth there. And you got all these sons, everything. You got a time frame and a quick sweeping scope of a period of time following Noah and his sons and their wives and everything coming out of the ark there and everything. And you get a quick sweeping scope of the progression of time and things that took place following that, especially focusing upon the division of the existence of nations and the divisions of them and so forth there. But then you begin in chapter 11 and verse 1, and you loop back into that to learn about an event that made it so that all these nations and everything, with their tongues and with their families and with their tribes, what produced such an effect like that and made it so that that came about. But you don't get the Tower of Babel incident and everything given to you until you understand the scope of things. And then you loop back into it, and you're given the issue of an event that allows you to mark the point of time in the scope you just received in chapter 9 and 10 as to when this event took place. And then based upon the event, you can see where the breaking up of the tribes and the sons' sons and everything into language of the nation, how it all took place. Chapter 9 and 10 give you the scope. Chapter 11 loops back in and gives you a parallel account with details to it. Looping parallelism again. Well, come over to an example of a large, massive example of this. Come on to 1 Samuel. I'm not going to be explicit as far as chapter and verse on this one. I'm just going to talk about it in general, because a general description is good enough for what we're doing right now and everything. You can refine this all that much more on your own if you want to. But you got a historical account of things. You know the issue of the historical progression of God's program with Israel in connection with the five courses of punishment there. As outlined in the book of Leviticus, chapter 26 there. When you begin in 1 Samuel here, chapter 1, you're at the time when the first course of punishment is winding itself down. The nation Israel is making itself worthy of coming under the second course of punishment. And they're declared to be worthy of that in chapter 15 and 16 here of 1 Samuel. But from 1 Samuel on to the end of 2 Kings, you've got the historical account of Israel going from the first course of punishment, worthy of the second course, receiving an interlude of glorious blessing and mercy under David and Solomon, but then coming under the second course of punishment, coming under the third course of punishment, then coming under the fourth course of punishment, and 2 Kings ends with the nation under the fifth course of punishment. And from 1 Samuel, therefore, on to 2 Kings, you've got that historical account of the transpiring of Israel's history from the first course, second course, third course, fourth course, to the commencement of the fifth course. Well, it's fascinating, though, when you get done with that, you go through that, just kind of flip through it there, the pages that I'm doing right now here. Do it in your Bible. You're moving along. You come to the end of 2 Kings there. 2 Kings chapter 25. You're at the end there, verse 30. And then there's Israel under that fifth course of punishment, under the first installment in that fifth course of punishment. You turn the page and you start the first book of the Chronicles. And what do? What's verse 1 say? Adam. God just gave Israel in particular, you read it also, a sweeping account of their history, especially beginning there in 1 Samuel, from the worthiness of the second course of punishment coming upon them until it does, and through to the third, fourth, and fifth course of punishment. And then before he goes on in the historical account any longer, which does resume there in Ezra, with the second installment of that fifth course of punishment, before he goes on and does any of that, he's going to, in the book of 1st, 2nd Chronicles, he's going to loop back all the way to Adam. All the way to the book of the generations of Adam, back there in Genesis chapter 5. He's going to loop back there. And then he's going to take you through the whole thing all over again. All the way up to 2 Chronicles chapter 36 there, where they come under the fifth course of punishment, and he's going to give you another historical account of the whole thing. And this time when he does it, he emphasizes some particular things that weren't necessarily emphasized and necessarily dealt with in the scope historical account of 1 Samuel to the end of 2 Kings. Now that's a massive example of looping parallelism. That's two whole huge books, 1 Chronicles, 2 Chronicles, that loop back and go over with a parallel account again. Looping parallelism, folks, is not a infrequently used method of presenting historical information in the Word of God. God uses it repeatedly. He starts off the book of Genesis with repeated use of it. And you get repeated use of it before you ever get to what we're looking at right now. But then you get these gigantic examples of it, as in the case of 1st, 2nd Chronicles. Look at the gospel accounts. Truth of the matter is, the gospel accounts, all four gospels, or I should put it this way, Mark, Luke, and John that follow Matthew, are examples of looping parallelism. Now, there's a reason why there's four gospels and four times the looping parallelism takes place, in accordance, of course, with the four declarations that God made to Israel through Isaiah and Zechariah concerning how that they need to behold the Messiah. He's going to present them in four different ways: King, servant, Son of Man, God Himself. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. But the truth of the matter is, Matthew presents the historical account of the Messiah's coming and earthly ministry and so forth there. And before you go on and deal with things following his earthly ministry and his resurrection, ascension back to the Father and everything, Mark comes along and loops you right back and you go through it again. And you're presented with the Messiah now as the perfect servant. Matthew presents him as the king. But you got to have him presented four different ways. And so you loop back and go through it again. Then you get to the end of Mark, and you loop back, go through it again with Luke, and you get him as Son of Man. And you loop back again with John, and you get him as God Himself, Adonai Jehovah, in human flesh. And it's until you go through it, that looping parallelism, four times, that the account resumes following his ascension back to his resurrection, ascension back to the Father, and Luke picks that up in Acts chapter 1. That's looping parallel. Another huge example of it, and major use of it. Well, come with me into the book of Acts. Here's an example of looping parallelism that has a great dispensational significance. In fact, God utilizes it, and by utilizing it, marks off in the book of Acts the issue of the great dispensational change the book of Acts records. in connection with God revealing the revelation of the mystery and the dispensation of grace to the Apostle Paul and thereby suspending his program with Israel. Acts chapter 1, beginning in verse 1, all the way through over to chapter 11 and verse 18, you have a progressive historical account of the extension of mercy and forbearance that God gave to Israel following their rejection of Christ that took place on the cross there. And you cut that takes you through to the end of chapter 7 there. And then you see the historical readiness, as Stephen saw, with the Son of Man standing at the right hand of the Father for the day of the Lord's wrath to begin. And the account goes on, describes historical events following that, that immediately let you realize that something's afoot and the things are not taking place as had been expected. And you learn about that immediately there in chapter 8 there. And then chapter 9 comes along, and you're focused upon this Saul of Tarsus, and the Lord Jesus Christ reappears to him unexpectedly and unprophesied. And instead, you're confronted with the fact that instead of the Lord Jesus Christ historically continuing on and fulfilling things according to the prophetic program, he's doing something unexpected. And the historical account goes on and describes the things that took place in connection with this Saul of Tarsus the Lord appeared to. And the historical account goes on, describes things going on in the with Israel's apostles there. And you see further examples of things that illustrate and show and manifest the fact that Israel's program is not continuing on as had been expected. The day of the Lord's wrath has not begun. And strange things are going on that those apostles are scratching their head over and don't know what's taking place, like with the Cornelius incident there with Peter and everything. And that's all recorded for you. And you come up to chapter 11 here and down all the way to verse 18. And those things have been recorded for you. And then look at what happens in verse 19 of chapter 11. Instead of the historical account proceeding on any further and describing events that take place from that point on, it loops back into a particular event that has already been given to you in the scope of things from chapter 1 up until that point. Verse 19 of chapter 11 says, "Now they which were scattered abroad upon the persecution that arose about Stephen," that was told to you back in chapter 8, but you're going to loop back now to chapter 8, and a parallel account is going to be recorded for you about things that took place from that point on that you didn't learn about in the scope that's just been given to you. And what you're told about is the issue of the hand of the Lord going with some individuals who had gone and spoke to the Grecians in Antioch. And by this looping parallelism back to that time, you're taken back to that cataclysmic event of what you learned about in the scope there, but about the readiness for the Lord to begin his day of wrath, the extension of mercy and forbearance being over. But it didn't begin. The day of wrath didn't begin. Rather, some very unexpected things took place. One of them being the Lord reappearing from heaven and raising up Saul of Tarsus, a brand new apostle. And so you're looped back into that time when all that stuff took place, and now you're shown that the hand of the Lord, instead of progressing on in Israel's program, was going to some Gentiles in Antioch. And you're also told about how that Saul of Tarsus is brought down to them. And you're looped back into the time when the change in programs took place. And now, from this point on, the focus of attention is upon that Saul of Tarsus and the hand of the Lord being with him and his ministry amongst the Gentiles. That looping parallelism issue there is a very important thing to acknowledge. Looping parallelism by its means is not only the educational means for layering the information so you get it in increments and small doses and are able to handle it and everything like that, but the looping parallelism also marks out certain events and everything within the scope as crucial. And that's a fascinating study on its own. I mean, we're just talking about things in very general terms here right now, so we're illuminated, I guess you might say, with respect to the existence of this method of presenting information and the value of it. But the more and more you learn about it, and more you recognize God's use of it, and more you acknowledge it and benefit from it and everything like that, the more and more important you see it become. And that God's able to mark things out, as he does here in the book of Acts, with it. And there's a whole host of things that are associated with that. But anyway, we're just talking about things in a general way here. Now, how are we doing here for time? We're down about 10 minutes left in this study, in this hour, I should say. I think you get, or hopefully you have, the general, a general understanding and appreciation for this issue of looping parallelism. Now, this is the method that's used in the book of the Revelation, beginning in chapter 6 there and verse 1, and running over to chapter 22 and verse 5. The daily newspaper account of the historical transpiring of the events of the Lord's day are presented in looping parallelism. And we'll see that, especially in the next lesson, when we survey it and note that and appreciate the presentation there and everything. But before we look at that, we need to acknowledge that there are at least two very special historical accounts that God had already given about the Lord's day before he gave the daily newspaper account in the book of the Revelation. There are at least two very special portions of his word in which he spoke about and set forth the issue of the details and the history of his day. And when he did it, he utilized the looping parallelism method of presentation to do it. And it's important to understand and recognize those two things, and therefore realize, especially on the basis of that, that he is going to do it again, and you'd expect him to do it when he gives the daily newspaper account in the book of the Revelation, which is exactly what he does do. Those two accounts, are the book of Daniel and a passage like Matthew chapter 24. And I want to take the balance of the time we have here in this lesson, and probably it's going to require a few minutes at the beginning of the next lesson, to quickly go over that with you and have you appreciate that, and then we'll see, therefore, the naturalness of it occurring and being used in the daily newspaper account of the book of the Revelation. Come with me, therefore, if you would, very quickly to the book of Daniel. And I'm going to talk very general about Daniel for the entire discussion on it here. Let me try and erase this stuff here. Unfortunately, sometimes this whiteboard with the black does not erase as quickly as we'd like. Daniel is a prophet God raised up at the beginning of the fifth course of punishment, and through him, God set forth the details. The general details about the fifth course of punishment. It's five installments and so forth there. And there are five revelations given to Daniel by which that information is presented. And those five revelations and the presentation information through them for the fifth course of punishment follows and utilizes looping parallelism. Let me have you turn here very quickly to Daniel chapter 2. And we're just going to turn for location. We're not going to really look at any details about this. At the time I'm making this tape, it does not have completed yet the closer examination of Daniel's revelations. It may be, though, that the time you're listening to this tape, it will have been done. You can inquire it and see whether that is the case. But anyway, there's five revelations given to Daniel. The first revelation is in chapter 2. I'm just going to talk about it in general, like I said, for location and everything. And that first revelation is a full-scope presentation of the fifth course of punishment. Full-scope presentation of the fifth course of punishment. And that full-scope presentation takes it from its commencement and its first installment through to its second installment, through to its third installment, through to its fourth installment, and its fifth installment. And chapter 2, Israel is given through that first revelation given to Daniel the scope, the general scope of the fifth course of punishment. They're at least told it's the time of the Gentiles and a little bit. There's five Gentile dominions making up five installments to that fifth course of punishment. So you get the full scope. The second revelation comes in chapter 7. And the second revelation loops back, and the entire period of time is gone over one more time. And this time, you still get the five installments being dealt with, but this time, further details are given concerning those five installments. The beastly characteristics of those Gentile dominions, for example, are described, and other things are given. The third revelation is chapter 8, and it begins, and it loops back, and it goes over the period of time again. And actually, the third revelation, I shouldn't say it goes over the whole period of time. It doesn't. The third revelation, enough has been said about the first installment. And the third revelation goes back and picks it up at the second installment that was still yet to come when Daniel was receiving the revelation. And it goes over and gives further details about the second installment, further details about the third installment, further details about the fourth installment, further details about the fifth installment. Once again, the first time you go through is the scope. And then it loops back and you've got details. And now you've got more details. Second time it loops back. Third revelation, how are we doing here? Third revelation is chapter 9. And that's especially where Daniel's given the time schedule. But he's going to loop back. He's going to go through it from the second installment on. And he's given the time schedule information about the time of the second installment, time of the third installment, time of the fourth installment. Well, things aren't lining up perfectly there, but anyway. Time of the fifth installment. And if I can put it up here, that third time it loops through, even... That's probably off the screen for you, but anyway, even more details. And then the fifth revelation is chapter 10 through 12, and it's going to loop back again and go through one more time. And there's going to be a little bit more information given about that second installment, not very much. A little more information given about that third installment, not very much. A little more information given about that fourth installment, but not very much. And the bulk of the focus is going to be upon that fifth installment once again. But the whole package is even more details. God employed the principle of that looping parallelism as he presented to Daniel the package of information about the fifth course. The Lord's day is that fifth and final installment there. And as you can see, when you put the whole package of information given to Daniel together, the greatest bulk of information, once again, is about that fifth and final installment already. But as we've seen when we were talking about this in the last lesson, Daniel had a whole bunch of questions about that, even with all this information given to him. And the Lord said the knowledge would be increased at the time of the end, when the time came for Daniel's people, to be experiencing that. He'd provide that increased knowledge. He provides it especially in the book of the Revelation, and he utilized the very same method of presentation utilized in Daniel we spoke about in the first place, and that's to be expected. That's not to be considered strange or anything like that. The more you understand the use of looping parallelism, folks, the more you naturally expect when you get to the book of the Revelation that it's going to be used, and it is used. Well, you see it. First you got scope. Loop back for details, and you can lay those details over the scope, and now you get a better picture. But you're going to loop back again, third revelation. You're going to lay that over that, you get even more information. Loop back again, fourth revelation. You're going to lay it on top of there like an overlay, and you get even more information there. And the fifth and final revelation loops back and gives even more details. That's looping parallelism. Now, I want you to realize the reality of it operating there in the book of Daniel. And we want to look at one other example. For example, Matthew 24. And you'll see when the Lord educate his disciples, Peter, James, John, and the apostles, especially in the fifth installment yet to come. He used the principle of looping parallelism as he dealt with them about it. And then we'll see. That's exactly what he uses in the book of the Revelation itself for the daily newspaper account. That's what we'll have to start looking at in the next lesson. So we'll take a few minutes at the beginning to look at Matthew 24, and then the remainder of the time to survey the book of the Revelation and appreciate the looping parallelism from chapter 6, verse 1 to chapter 22, verse 5. Okay, until next time.